This is episode 341 with six-time member of the U.S. National Trail Running Team, professional runner, and founder of Boulder's The Trail Team, Andy Wacker. Welcome to the Strength Running Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Jason Fitzgerald, and my singular goal is to help you improve your running by getting stronger, racing faster, preventing more injuries, and achieving more of your goals. After running cross country and track for Connecticut College, I turned my sights to longer distances and eventually ran a 2:39 marathon. I'm also a columnist for Trail Runner magazine and creator of the Performance Training Journal, now on Amazon. You can learn more about me and strength running at strengthrunning.com. And if you enjoy this show, please support our partners who are offering you some great deals on amazing products that are going to help your performances and overall health. First is the Mobo Board. Go to moboboard.com and use code STRENGTHRUN10 to save 10% on your board. If you're injury prone or you just want to stay healthy, the Mobo Board is your new best friend. It was created by physical therapist and author Jade Sherry, and this training tool helps you stabilize your stance, improve your stability, and reinforce better movement patterns. Stronger runners experience less wear and tear on their joints, so let's get strong and then use that strength the right way. Get yours at moboboard.com, and don't forget code STRENGTHRUN10. It'll save you 10%. We're also supported by the high-nutrient probiotic drink AG1. I love this stuff. It's the most popular greens mix available on the market with 75 vitamins and minerals, prebiotics, probiotics, antioxidants, and adaptogens. To make taking control of your health even easier, AG1 is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune system-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. You can't be fast if you're not first healthy. So visit drinkag1.com/Jason, and you can choose from a single purchase or a monthly drop to make this part of your ongoing nutrition plan. See all the details at drinkag1.com/Jason. My guest today is Andy Wacker, a professional runner who excels on the track, road, and trail. He is the 2019 World Mountain Running Champion, the 2016 U.S. Trail Half Marathon Champ, the 2015 U.S. Trail 50K Champion, and a two-time NCAA Cross Country All-American. Andy can do it all. Lately, Andy has been growing the trail running community by founding the Trail Team, a group of elite and sub-elite athletes that work together in Boulder, Colorado to professionalize the sport and create more opportunities for runners everywhere. In this episode, we talk more about his unique approach to training, which focuses on a seasonal approach and a crossover model so that athletes can also run on the roads and the track. We also discuss his longevity in the sport, why it's a good idea to focus on middle distance races sometimes, his plans for the track team in 2024, and a lot more. Without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Andy Wacker. But I think the first time that we actually talked was 2015 for an interview for my team strength running group, or maybe it was 2016. And that was a long time ago. And the first thing that comes to mind is, my God, Andy, you have such longevity in such a difficult sport. How long have you been trail running post-collegiately?
Yeah, I think I ran my first trail race in 2013. So I finished my eligibility at University of Colorado and ran the U.S. Mountain Running Championships that year. And that's a whole nother story, but it's kind of funny because that race was my first trail race, and I also quit trail running after that.
Wow, you lasted so long.
I know. Yeah, just because it was so hard. So running up and down a ski mountain in New Hampshire.
The first time I ever ran a trail race, I finished a trail half marathon 30 minutes slower than my road PR. And it was one of the most demoralizing experiences of my running career.
Yeah, you got to throw away the watch sometimes. But yeah, is it interesting because you just said the longevity thing. I was thinking about that recently because I just ran Rock and Roll Las Vegas half marathon. And I was like, okay, I've run this race a couple times. I've run it well, not that long ago. So I looked it up and the time that I ran well was 2013. And so, or sorry, 2014. And so it was technically 9.5 years ago because it was in December at that time. But yeah, I ran like 103 high in 2014 and then came back 2 weeks ago and just ran 104 and won the thing finally. But it took 10 years of coming back to win it. So
I love it. What a testament to never quit. You might be able to win the race that you're running now 10 years from now. I love that. Andy, let me ask you, why did you quit trail running after your first trail race? Was it just the shock of how difficult it was compared with, you know, running cross country and track beforehand?
Yeah, I think it's a good story to tell because okay, so I just graduated college. I tried a couple different things, which I tell everyone to do. I think, especially if you're a good collegiate runner, if you're anyone, you should try different distances and types of running. So I ran, you know, something like the US 15K Road Champs. And then that was in March. And then this was maybe in the summer, like July, or in the US Mountain Running Champs. But I went in with like, I was just, like being arrogant, I think. I think I was like, oh, I'm gonna like make the world team and probably win. And so I went in and ran really aggressively, was kind of in the lead. It was a really hard format too that year. So it was down up. So it started at the top of Cranmore, I'm pretty sure, mountain in New Hampshire. And we took the gondola up and the race starts with a downhill and then it was three laps. So down, up, down, up, down, up. And I made it through about halfway. And then the people like Max King and Joe Gray, who knew what they were doing, actually started racing and I fizzled. And I remember just being like, yeah, just destroyed physically, but also kind of mentally and emotionally when I'm walking up the last uphill, seeing the world team spots disappear. And I think I just had like the wrong attitude and the wrong perspective going into it. Like you were saying, oh, I ran like 30 minutes slower for my first trail race 10K. And so, yeah, so I quit trail running cause I was like, this is too hard. It's not for me or whatever it was. And it took until basically early 2015. So like a little over a year. And I finally like kind of grew up and said, you can lean into the challenge rather than, be like overcome by it.
Wow. What a story. There's a couple things I want to hit on from what you said. The first thing I'll say is I love the idea of sort of doing something a little bit different when you graduate college, if you ran cross country and track. You know, I was a mediocre Division III runner, so I wasn't hoping to make any sort of team whatsoever post-collegiately. But, you know, I still wanted to train. I loved it. It was fun for me. And I started doing triathlons. Since I ran Division III, we never did 10K cross country. So I did my first 10K cross country race at Franklin Park in Boston, Massachusetts, which was such an experience. And, you know, then I started getting into some of the longer road racing distances and just doing something a little bit different, focusing on a multi-sport race, a longer cross-country race, these longer road races. It really kept the interest in the sport alive for me. And I think that's a really important aspect of choosing different events to focus on. It just keeps you more engaged with the sport. And I think that's probably one of the reasons for your amazing longevity is the fact that, you know, you've gone back and forth, you've had this rich history on the track and now on the trail. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about the last time that we spoke was this idea that fitness is fitness. And, you know, you really exemplify this in your approach to races because, look, if you're a good runner, you're going to be able to race a good mile or a 5K or a 10K and probably be pretty decent at a trail run too, you know, assuming you do a little bit of specific preparation for that. So I really like that. Let's talk a little bit more about, you know, your complete devotion now to trail running. Because, you know, you went from track runner to trying a trail race. Then you were like, oh, I don't like this at all. This is too hard. I completely agree with you that the mindset that you have as a track athlete does not serve you well as a trail athlete. And you almost have to unlearn that completely or else you'll just sort of drive yourself crazy on the trails. What made you fall in love with trail running after a little bit of a, pardon the pun, rocky start with the sport?
Yeah. Gosh, there's like a lot of pieces to this. I always tell the same story, which is part of it is I made my first US team. So it took about a year of just road running. In 2014 was a big road year for me. And to clarify too, I still do seasons. So I usually like to run some road races in the winter and then kind of hit the trails pretty hard in the summer. And that keeps it fresh, speaking of which. So it keeps things really nice. But yeah, one thing, it was kind of funny because I was running a lot of these rock and roll half marathons, speaking of which, from 10 years ago. And my friend Jeffrey, who I was training with, he's like, "Do you want to do a hill workout?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" And he meant running up what used to be called Mount Evans, now Mount Blue Sky. And it was like a 14 and a half mile uphill road race. That was like a mountain race. And so I did that. And I think, again, like took a year to mature post running the US mountain running champs and kind of having this guy, Jeffrey, who is a world-class marathoner as a mentor, be like, "We're going to go in this and just run hard. And it doesn't matter like what the splits are and what the things are." So that was like a big success. Like I won that race, made my qualified for Team USA to run on Pikes Peak that year, and really just went in with a fresh mindset. And I think it took time just to say like, which is all the things I love about trail running and why I tell people to try it nowadays, which is, if you are type A, if you're kind of overly obsessed with splits and those kind of things, you can be really freed from that. And having the mindset, like the trail mindset of, enjoying it, having fun, like leaning into the challenge rather than like avoiding it. I think there's a lot to that, and you can find the best in yourself by maybe, kind of approaching it differently than road flat running.
Do you think now that everyone is like kind of a indentured servant to their GPS watch, does that make getting into that trail mindset a little bit more difficult? Because I know that even with my track background, you know, it sort of makes me look at the watch a little bit more often. How fast am I running right now? What was the last split? If I run this pace for the last couple miles, I'll be able to average this. And, you know, the track brain is just going like at 100 miles an hour with splits and all that. And I feel like it's aided by the watch. Do you like turn your watch off when you get onto the trails? Do you put it on just time of day? Like where's the balance between looking at some of the metrics on a run or even in a race and just getting into that trail mindset and just not worrying about it so much?
Yeah, that's a good point. I definitely do wear my watch during trail races and trail runs. I think maybe it helps that I'm like just old enough where GPS watches weren't that good when I was like running in college. And I think I was really taught to like listen to my body. Like Mark Wetmore at University of Colorado is still teaching that, right? It's like, you know what your heart rate is, you know what your respiratory rate is, you know what your effort is if you're practicing all the time. So why not use that data? Like, of course we have like metrics for it. You can look at a power output and all these kind of things, but the old school way is just like be in tune. And so I think that's the skill that's still useful to be taught. And I think it is hard because you want to ignore your watch. So you can wear it and look at it afterwards. And people are obsessed with GAP, like gap splits and those kind of things. But you can wear a heart rate monitor. You can look at all these things. But I think how you know that you got the best out of yourself is if you, you know that you push yourself during the hard parts. And so I think like, no matter what, maybe that resonates too, is like, if you're in the middle of a race and you're like faced with that decision to like push or not, you're the one who knows if you do it. And the metrics might not even show that.
I love that. It's sort of like poetry to me. And I think from a developmental perspective, if I could not have any new runner wear a GPS watch for the first like year or two of their running career, I probably would, you know, mandate that from the high court of strength running, just so that you can really understand those signals. Because if all you're paying attention to is your watch, you're probably not paying as much attention to your body. And that's where so much of the learning happens, you know? And I think I have a couple years on you. So you were saying, oh, GPS watches weren't that good in college. We didn't have them at all in college. And I was just talking to another, a competitor of mine, actually Mario Frioli. I think you probably know him. And we were sort of just, you know, wistful about the days of the $30 Timex watch. And you know how long you've been running from a time perspective and how you feel. And that's pretty much it. And for a long time, I think that was good enough. And we got some really good performances out of that. Andy, I want to switch a little gears just quickly here and talk about something you said earlier that I think is very impactful for our listeners, which is this idea of seasons and having a different focus for the seasons throughout the year. Can you talk a little bit about how you think about an entire year of running and then splitting that into seasons, not just based on, you know, the weather and sort of what's going on outside, but what kind of races that you'd like to run and how they all sort of blend together?
Yeah, I think there's one thing that comes up right away that's a little bit of a tangent is that I think that the best trail runners right now are what I call crossover athletes. And that means like Sophia Lockley. She is an incredible Nordic skier in the winter and then a really good trail runner in the summer. Other people might do what I do, which is flatter running, like road racing, for part of the year and then trail running. Grayson Murphy's a perfect example. Like she made the, she got sixth in the Olympic trials for the steeplechase a couple of years ago. So yeah, for me, I think my takeaways and everyone's different, but, one, it just keeps it fun. Like it keeps it really fresh to have a new goal and to maybe work on different parts of your running. So for example, like right now I'm doing a lot of speed work. I'm running like a lot of sub 5 minute miles. And I think, sure, I might not be running sub 5 minute miles on the trails come April through, you know, December, but, having that there, your cardiovascular system's being pushed, which is a good thing. And so it's kind of nice to have a little different stimulus maybe during the winter. Yeah, in general, mine looks like 6 months and 6 months. I think you need a long time to get like dialed in. Like you can't just do like, I see people wanting to do like, oh, I'll do a road race and then immediately do a trail race and then do an ultra and then do a mile race. And like, you're probably not going to do as well physiologically, I would assume, because you need some time to adapt to the training and it needs to be somewhat specific enough. So I split mine into roughly, usually it's like December through June is my like road season where I'm focusing on flat, faster running. And then I switch into trails from June through the end of the year. This year, it's going to be a little earlier because Golden Trail Series races start in April.
I work with a lot of runners who love the marathon. And, you know, they love doing two, maybe three marathons a year. And so I'm sort of always in this position of trying to advise runners to have some different seasons mixed up in there too. You know, I love when, you know, a runner who's focused on the marathon for 12 months or 18 months, take a season and really focus on middle distance races and try to run a fast 5K. What kind of advice would you give to, you know, the quote unquote marathon maniac, the person who loves the marathon? Maybe they've hit a plateau. Maybe their performances aren't getting any better the way that they would like them to. How would you advise this runner to think maybe a little bit more holistically or long-term about their training and fitness so that hopefully, you know, maybe 6 months from now or a year from now, they could actually have a breakthrough in the marathon?
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces to that. I think, one, it's just like fun. It's refreshing. Cause if you're like, hey, I identify as a marathoner, I'm terrible at running the mile, then you should go run a mile or a 3K or some distance that you haven't raced before. Just because it makes you feel, you kind of start with a beginner's mindset again. And it kind of is refreshing because you're like, your expectations are so much lower. And so it makes it more fun. And I think one challenge I've seen, at least like for professionals, cause I know a lot of people who are just professional marathoners and they've been doing it for, like you said, maybe like 10 years straight. Like the Stephanie Bruces of the world, who are incredible marathoners, by the way. Maybe she's a bad example because she's mixed it up a little bit, but some people just focus on, yeah, I'm going to run Boston, New York, Boston, New York, Boston, New York, repeat. And I think they like have one big thing I see is like, if you're specifically for the road marathon, because you bring that up, is like you get super efficient and your stride is like, you like get like this much air. And so you're like not powerful at all. And it's just like, you're so much less athletic as like a longtime marathoner. And so just like injecting this little speed season. And I mean, it can be as short as like maybe a month or 6 weeks. Like my training group, we just did like a month of training on the track every Thursday to get ready for a little mile race for fun. And I think it just like makes you get out of your comfort zone and have a little fun, low expectations. And yeah, maybe it will help with a breakthrough because all of a sudden you're running with power again instead of just efficiency.
Were you at the Mile High Mile track meet in Boulder last July or August? I'm forgetting exactly the month that it was held, but you know, I went just to spectate. I wasn't in a position to go race a hard mile, but that was so amazing to me because there were so many folks who had either never raced a mile or folks who, you know, hadn't raced a mile in over a decade. And they're on the track trying to run, you know, just about four laps as hard as they can. And for me, just like watching and sort of like, you know, trying to learn from this experience, it was so cool because so many people were learning a lot about how to pace yourself when you're like riding that edge of like what you're capable of from a speed perspective. And I think a lot of learning can happen in 5 to 10 minutes on the track of running really hard. Everything from pacing to learning those signals from your body, especially when you're pushing yourself to that maximum. I would just love to see it because I think so much can be learned in those middle distance races that, you know, maybe would take a little bit longer to learn if you're only running two marathons a year. You know, then there's also the issue of the fact that maybe you're only racing twice a year, or maybe you have a half marathon tune-up and you're only racing four times a year. That's not a lot of racing. And I think a lot of learning happens when we race a lot.
Yeah, I like that. I think just like the pure race, like racing itself too, like navigating traffic with people around you and stuff like that in the mile, it's pretty exciting. So
Andy, you've started the trail team, which is really interesting to me because it is a team of elite, and I also believe sub-elite trail runners who are not focused on the ultra distances. And that I think is a very unique distinction because I think when a lot of runners think trail race, they think some type of ultra marathon. Now I know you've done some ultras, but you know, broadly speaking, what is prevented you from being lured into the ultra world and still sticking with such a variety of races and probably focusing a little bit more on, you know, the sub marathon distances on the trails?
Yeah. And to clarify, I've run a few 50Ks, so barely tapped into the ultra scene.
You're still an ultra runner, Andy. I'm still gonna call you that.
You know, I think it's just like, we don't expect Usain Bolt to run a marathon, you know? And so when we're watching track and field, like people are specialists in different distances. I think I'm pretty lucky because I can run anywhere from 5K to 50K decently well. And so I've liked sticking to that just because I enjoy it. I think I've seen it sometimes, like it's really funny. I remember talking to like an agent like 5 years ago or something. I don't currently have an agent. But I was talking to one at the time just to try to get a better contract. And he's like, just win a race. And I was like, what do you mean? I just went to the world championships and like did this and this and this. And like, he's like, no, just like win, like run rabbit run 100. And I was like, no, like I'm not going to run a 100-mile race at the end of the year. Like I just had like a great sub ultra year. And I think it's a disconnect with this particular person, but also a lot of brands and a lot of, yeah, a lot of people still see trail running as ultra running. And I hope that's changing because of a couple things. One, there's people like me and Joe Gray who are like, no, we're good at this like 10K thing. You know, we're going to keep on running 10K or marathon, somewhere in between. That's like what we like to race. I think there's validity in those races. I think just like a 5K on the track, just because it's not the longest or shortest event doesn't mean it's not a great race. And with that, I think like, the pro scene is changing, but also like the average trail race is changing, which is great because it's more accessible. Like you don't have to be like a 40-year-old French guy, or you don't have to have like a beard and like short shorts to like run trail races and run ultras. Like you can be a variety of people. And so I think that's really cool. So I hope that even though, yes, I'm being selfish because that's what I like to race, I think, you know, like having 10K trail races is like really cool so that just your everyday runner can try one out and not be intimidated by it.
I love that. You know, I'll just speak from personal experience. I've run a bunch of marathons. I've started a 50K. I had to drop out with a knee injury. But having more accessible trail races is just amazing to me because like I, even living here, you know, I live in Denver and I'm always looking for some great trail races to run. And I'm not always, you know, in the shape that a 20K or 30K or even a trail marathon would demand, but I would love to go run a trail 10K and just experience the trails and the amazing beauty that we have in our backyard here in Colorado. You know, that's probably a whole separate conversation of just trails are just more fun. Like it's so beautiful, especially if you're in somewhere like Colorado or Oregon or out down in Flagstaff, Arizona. I mean, some of these trails are just stunning and getting more people on them just to experience it, just to test themselves in a different way, I think has so much value. And it's also like this interesting entry point to trail running, where if we were just putting on 50Ks, the sport would probably be a lot smaller because not everyone has the inclination to go run 31 miles. That's kind of a big ask. So I think this is really great. And I would personally love to see the trail scene grow at all levels. Yes, of course, I want to see amazing athletes crush 100-mile distances and in crazy times. I mean, that's just exciting. It's just such an amazing feat of athleticism and endurance. But also, let's get someone running a fast trail 5K. That's fun too. So there's so much to like about this. And I'm glad that the trail team is focusing a little bit more on the sub-ultra distances because it's not really something that a lot of people are focusing on. Tell me a little bit more about the structure of the team, the organization. I understand you started it, but like when did it start and kind of how has it evolved over time?
Sure. Yeah. So I started the trail team in December 2022. So just over a year ago. And really the impetus behind it was like, there's no NCAA to pro trail running pipeline. Like there just isn't. So if you're a really good runner coming out of like this huge, amazing support structure we have for college runners, there's nowhere to go. And you don't even notice that there's this whole subgenre of running on the trails that you could do. So about a year ago, we did that. So what it looks like is right now it's evolved a little bit. So you were speaking this before, but there's three kind of pieces to it. One is we have an elite team. And that's really just to like show it's basically to support pro trail running in America. One of the things that like really started this was I think it was in 2019. I can't remember what year it was, but I was running the US Mountain Running Champs, like we just talked about before. But at this point, like I was kind of the veteran. Like I'd done this, I think I made my like sixth team in a row. And I remember being like, it's great that I made my sixth team, but like, how come 22-year-old guys aren't beating me? So I'm 35 now. This might've been, you know, when I was like 30 or 31. And I'm like, at some point, you know, when I'm like 45 years old, I hope there's a lot of young guys beating me because I want like this sport to grow in the US. So like that thought was really in mind when I was like creating the elite team is like, how can we develop those people? Like they're already there. They just need a little bit of support. So our elite team is six athletes. We just selected the next team for 2024. So I'll have to send you a link to share with that. And I'll dive into this just a little bit and then we'll talk about the other pieces, but because there's three parts of the team. So the elite team is six athletes and really what we do for them, like what the organization does is it matches people like me who we call mentors with the six athletes so that they can get just like advice, support, figure out what races matter, where to go, you know, what mistakes not to make in your first couple of years as a pro runner. The next thing we do is just, it's really big nowadays to have media. So we're helping to get media support, photos, videos of young athletes and just like share that story so that everyone can see trail running's accessible and possible. And really, again, aimed at NCAA runners, but kind of sharing that message more broadly. And then the last piece is like trail running is a little funky. So we usually try to help put on trail camps. We did one last year in Grand Lake, Colorado, and then one in Courmayeur, Italy, where we took those elite runners to these places and with the mentors and ran up and down mountains and kind of taught them how to run a little bit better on trails if they didn't kind of advance their skills. Yeah, so that's the elite team. And then just real briefly, the other pieces are we have a 30-person club team, which is maybe sub-ultra, or sorry, it's not sub-ultra, they're all sub-ultra, but it's maybe sub-elite, but a lot of, I'd call it like the best unsponsored runners in America. So it's a lot of trail runners who are maybe not getting any support from brands. And we're just kind of connecting those people to have a strong team to help each other. And then last of all, I just saw like a gap here in Boulder, Colorado, that there wasn't a training group. Like there's no sub ultra training group in the world, basically, for trail running. So we started it. We said, if you want to like do really well in the trails, like come join us.
That's amazing. Is there any financial support provided so that they can pay their bills and just focus on their training? Because I know that, you know, one of the big issues with pro runners is that, you know, your training takes up a fair amount of time. It's a full-time job. Then there's all the other things that go along with the running itself, like strength training and doing a good warm-up and, you know, doing some drills and getting in some sort of recovery afterward and maybe going to see the sports psychologist. And next thing you know, you're like, man, I wish there were 25 hours in a day. How do you manage that aspect of things?
Yeah. So we're definitely grassroots. We raised $25,000 last year, and that came from individual donors and also brands. But our ask was basically that we were kind of trying to flip the whole script. I think a lot of brands right now want to like support athletes with a huge caveat that they're marketing agents essentially for the brand. And our ask was, you give us money or free product and we're going to share if we want. And so I think it made it a lot more authentic. And so that was like, oh yeah, like when you actually hear from these athletes getting supported, they actually like this stuff. It's not like faked and bought. And as a, then, and to reciprocate, like the athletes are able to get pro contracts. So, I think almost all the athletes we supported last year, the six runners, let's see, Anna Gibson got a Brooks deal. Mika got a Brooks deal. Sam runs for Salomon. Lauren got signed by Nike. So they had like most of our runners got a professional contract with a brand that could help support them with that kind of additional financial support.
Yeah, I have so many thoughts running through my head about how to grow the sport through this kind of grassroots support for professional and also these like sub elite runners who could get there potentially, but they need the support to get there. What do you think are some of the most important things to give these types of athletes? Is it time? Is it free gear? Is it just money? Is it the advice and mentorship like you were talking about previously? What are some of these most impactful things that, you know, on a day-to-day basis, when these athletes are training and trying to get to the next level and, you know, actually competing for the podium in a lot of races, what moves the needle?
Yeah. So I thought I had a good idea. And then I, just to be like fair, I asked like 100 people last year. So I just started making phone calls to like, you know, recent grads, you know, young trail runners, people who are a year or two into it. And just listening, because I think no one had done that before, and just be like, what do you actually need? And I saw a couple things. So that's what we focus on. We focus on mentorship. So like actually just giving advice and having someone to ask questions to. Think about like, who do you want to be in 3 years? Like, who is that? How can you make that next jump? The second thing that's gone like a long way, and we especially use this for our club team, is like, we can use just a small amount of money, a couple $1,000s, and we'll rent an Airbnb and have free housing at races. So just lowering that cost for athletes to get to big races. Because if you have to fly to California and rent a car and rent an Airbnb and on, it just adds up. So just lowering that cost slightly by kind of working together and just like sharing housing, essentially. And then I think, you know, a lot of people ask for community. I think that's a big piece, and trail running's great with that. People are really friendly. They're welcoming to the sport, you know, from my perspective. And I think that's like a big asset we have over other pieces of running. But having like, man, like there's a weird coincidence that the people we chose for our elite team succeeded a lot last year, and the people we didn't succeed as well. And I'm wondering what that is. It's like a validation piece. Is it like, you know, if you're hurt or not hurt, we're cheering for you, and like having a support group. So I think there's something to having a team.
Yeah. I mean, I think anyone who ran in a collegiate setting understands like how much a team can really help you. I was actually just talking about this to a group of people who are not runners whatsoever, but one of the most impactful things from my entire running career was my college cross country coach telling me, I want you to believe me when I tell you how good you can be. And just having that person sort of in my corner telling me that you have a lot of potential, I see it, let's work hard and try to express that. Like, here I am 19 years later, and that was so meaningful to me. And, you know, when you say like support and mentorship, like it can go so, so far. And that's really impactful for runners. I want to ask you a provocative question.
All right.
Here we go. You were previously a Nike sponsored athlete. Is that right?
Yeah.
I feel like a company like Nike could sponsor the entire trail running sport and it not really make a financial hit to a company like that. And they sort of do sponsor certain athletes and certain races and things like that. But what would it take to get a giant company like Nike to actually make a sizable investment in the trail running sport? Because when I think about how to grow the sport, that's like the biggest lever I see to pull to actually do it. But it's a big pull.
So that's actually really interesting, because this is what I think about all the time. That's why I created the trail team. The trail team's the answer, in my opinion, because I think companies are the last to know. So being in the sport, I'm like, you guys don't see this. Like there's young people, there's 20-year-olds that want to run trails. Like think about how big high school cross country is. It's a huge sport. People love it. Like that's a big focus for Nike. But if you look at, you know, like why isn't that happening in trail? It is, despite there not being a lot of media and a lot of financial support for it right now. I think you can look at the growth of new races. Mammoth Trail Fest, 2 years old and growing really big. There's, you know, 2 Golden Trail Series races out of 8 in the U.S., which I think is a big deal, because the U.S. is like has been this 100-mile haven, but now it's like the races are growing. So the people are coming. If you look at World Athletics, they say trail running's growing by 15% a year. I think all the other parts of running are probably decreasing in size. So more and more people are running on the trails than ever. So I think it's going to happen, and then Nike's going to notice or Salomon or whoever, right? And then they're going to be like, oh yeah. So that was my thought all along, is if you build it, they will come. So we're going to build this. We're going to build the first professional in-person training group, and then Nike will, and then On will, and then Salomon will, and that's okay. Like I want this to see the sport grow, but I think, you know, if one guy in Colorado can launch this thing and make it happen through people's belief, then I think it's going to happen. It's inevitable at this point.
Yeah. With a sport that's growing at 15% a year, I don't think a lot of people realize how fast that will start doubling the sport, because it's pretty gigantic. You know, I'd love my portfolio to grow at 15% a year. You know, that's a great return right there.
Yeah.
What else does the trail team need in terms of support, in terms of growth opportunities? You know, I'm actually thinking a lot about what you said in terms of media, because trail running is one of those sports that I think really lends itself to media that can capture the imagination of other folks, because it's done in some of the most beautiful places in the country and places that not everyone can get to, places that not everyone has seen in their lives. And, you know, half of me just is like, you know, I just want to be on the Colorado Tourism Board, you know, just like promoting the amazing mountains of Colorado. But I feel like that is very much working in trail running's favor to help promote the sport. But like, what else do you see as opportunities for additional growth? So in other words, Can next year have 12 elite runners for the trail team?
Yeah, we kept it at 6 this year. We're definitely thinking about growing. I think, man, there's so much going on with that. Media is growing, and I think that's going to help. Like you said, I know you just talked about this a lot, but social media is still like newer for some of these things. Live streaming for trail races is like becoming standard in the last year. That's changed. So I think more like imagine all the people who run road races. Like there's, you know, I just ran Rock and Roll Vegas. I keep on talking about it, but there's 27,000 people that did it. If those people knew that trail running existed, which I don't think they do, then if they just need to see some of these images, and then they might be like, oh, I might want to try that. So that's going to continue to grow the sport. I think for our team, man, right now, everything's going well. And I think that's going to keep on driving our success. So like having a culture of excellence and professionalism and showing that that's standard, because that hasn't been. Again, like I think this old message of what trail running looks like just needs to be eliminated, unfortunately. Like it's too limiting. It says it's only for men, only for middle-aged dudes, basically with beards. And like saying, no, it's like young, fast women who ran in college, who also compete in skiing or on the track when they're not trail running. You know, they have a strength. I have a strength coach. I just went to strength training. I have like, you know, people talk with professional nutrition experts. And so it's a lot more evolved than this, like, oh, we'll just like wing it. And like, I live in the woods kind of idea, even though that's kind of cool too. So showing that message is pretty important. Just to show that it's a serious contender, just like other aspects of running. And so I think we're doing that. I think results show that, you know, US having a presence on our international teams, those are like really important to me. And I think that's what we're doing. Like last year we had, let's see, like countless people. We had like people make the world championships for trail running, Challenge Stellina, NACAC, on and on. So they were wearing US kits.
That's great. Yeah. And I think you're right. Like trail running has this either vibe or sort of, you know, this unfortunate sort of like background almost, as like similar to like these climbing bums who live in a van down by the river and all they do is climb every day. And trail running has become so much more than that. You know, these folks who live in a hut in the middle of the mountains and all they do is like run 30 miles a day. But now I think exactly what you are doing is driving the sport forward, because when you get fast athletes who then go to the trails, not just people who love the trails and they try to get better at it while trail running, but, you know, these former track athletes, these former cross country runners, you know, who have posted really impressive times on the track, on the road, and then they get into trail running, it's like they're bringing a certain speed and fitness and an approach to a sport that, you know, like we said earlier, fitness is fitness. And I think that's what's driving a lot of the performances, because we're seeing trail running is just becoming so competitive in the last 1, 2, 3 years. I mean, I love seeing it, but you know, it's also like, wow, how much better are these guys going to get in these girls? So, you know, it's just amazing.
Yeah. And just a little note, you said, you know, former track athletes, I think it's current, like they're crossover athletes. Like they're going to make the Olympic trials on the track. They're going to make a Christian Allen, who was one of our athletes last year on the trail team, made US cross team. He made the Olympic trials in the marathon, and he was one of the best trail runners in the world last summer. So I think it's concurrent. So it validates what we're doing. I think like good athletes are good athletes, and it's not, yeah, I'm like, I used to be a marathoner and I quit. Now I'm running trails. I don't think that exists. I think that's like that's a rumor.
I think it's a self-limiting belief to sort of pigeonhole yourself into a certain race distance, to think of yourself as I'm a 5K runner or I'm a marathoner or I'm a trail runner. You know, I love what you're doing, because I think you can become the best runner you can be by doing a variety of things and always approaching your training or attempts to improve your fitness level from a different perspective, from a different approach. You know, having a trail season, having a speed season, you know, maybe having an ultra season thrown in there too. And you're just doing a whole variety of things. And that just results in a more robust athlete who has more physical skills and is going to be able to excel in so many different areas. Andy, this has been really interesting learning about what you're doing. What's next for the trail team? You said you've chosen the 6 elite runners for this year. Have they started racing yet? And do you guys race as a team? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So they just got chosen. So how it works is a few of them are still graduating NCAA. So we have, at least 2 out of 6 are still in college. And so they're going to be finishing their collegiate outdoor season on track and hopefully doing really well there. And then they'll take a little break and bring that fitness to the trails. So we don't technically, to answer your second question, we don't race as a team every single race. It is individualized enough where we're trying to support these people to meet the biggest goals they can. We kind of set goal races for the year for both our club team and for our elite team to say, like, let's go to these because they're the ones that matter in terms of like getting sponsorship, being visible, pushing the sport forward, making US teams. So this year we're going to be at, let me see if I can go in order here. Broken Arrow in California in June. Then we're going to be at Loon Mountain, which is the US vertical champs in New Hampshire in July, followed by Cirque Series Snowbird in July, which is the US up and down mountain championships. And then Headlands 27K and Mammoth. So the California races in September that are part of Golden Trail Series. So hopefully our athletes will be, not hopefully they will be, most of them will be at those races competing and wearing like a shared uniform and warming up together and just succeeding. And again, sharing that message that trail running is for fast runners too. And sub-ultra matters.
Sub-ultra matters. I love it. And speaking of a uniform, I was just browsing the trail team's website. You guys sell some cool t-shirts and hats. I really want the trail team hat that you guys offer. So if anyone really wants to support the team, you know, there's a link in the description for this podcast episode. You can go to the site and get some really cool gear. Hopefully if I wear it around Boulder, I'll maybe see some members of the team and give some high fives out. One of my favorite reasons to go to Boulder is just like, you never know who you're going to see walking around town. You know, you're like, oh, ooh, there's an Olympian. Oh, they're on the trail team.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So Andy, I just want to thank you for what you're doing for the running community, the trail community in particular. I think this is the kind of work that needs to be done to grow the sport. And as just a huge running nerd myself, like, I love to see it. I'm so enamored by the shorter distances as like a recovering track runner myself, that I love seeing sub-ultra distances being focused on. And I think it makes trail running itself so much more fun and accessible for anybody who hasn't tried it. So at a bare minimum, I hope this episode has inspired runners to try a trail race, to go and get off the normal beaten path of road races and just go explore some trails in a formal race, because it can be so fun. Is there anything that you want to add, Andy, as we wrap up today, about trail running or the idea of seasons or the trail team itself or how any listener could support you guys? Anything that I might have missed?
Yeah, I think we touched on the main things. I'm a big believer in crossover athletes. We talked about having seasons, starting with sub-ultra, but also, of course, moving, if anyone wants to move up to ultra, I'm not against that in any way. I love the all parts of the sport. Follow us on Instagram. It's the_trail_team. Our website is trail-team.com. So that's pretty easy. We're affiliated with American Trail Running Association. We're a 501(c). So we're, tax deductible donation. We also have tons of events and those kind of things we're doing just for average people to experience trails and go on fun runs or check out film nights and those kind of things coming up. So follow along to be part of those, no matter who you are.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in going for a trail run. That sounds fun. And I'm in Denver, so I'm kind of local. I'll include links to your Instagram account, the website, and some related resources in the show notes so folks can check you guys out. Andy Wacker, thanks so much for your time and all you're doing. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's our show today, my friends. Thank you so much for listening and being part of this community. Please also support our sponsors who help me keep the lights on. Use their links and discount codes to support the Strength Running Podcast. First is one of my favorite strength and performance tools, the Mobo Board. Go to moboboard.com and use code STRENGTHRUN10 to save 10% on your board. This was invented by physical therapist Jade Sherry, and the Mobo helps you stabilize your stance with this rocker board that's set up on two fins. You can actually change and flip the board over and use on the other side for your other leg. Now, there's a hole where your four little toes are supposed to be, which effectively forces you to drive your big toe into the board to improve your stability. If you want to hear Jay and I discuss stability training a lot more, you can tune into episode 275. Now, I was actually pretty confident going into my first session on the Mobo board because I thought balance wasn't very difficult and that I could stay on the board, use it appropriately, and not have too many problems. Well, I was humbled pretty quickly. Even if you're a good runner, better balance, stability, and proprioception are all going to help you have a more powerful stride and prevent more running injuries. You'll learn how to improve the efficiency of the kinetic chain from your hip to your big toe. Because as Jay likes to say, it's not just how strong you are, but how well you use that strength. Save 10% with code STRENGTHRUN10 at checkout at moboboard.com. Again, that's STRENGTHRUN10 at moboboard.com. I'm also grateful for the support of AG1, the health and wellness company that makes comprehensive daily nutrition super simple. And I personally struggle with eating healthy all the time because, what can I say, I'm a man of convenience. So I love simple strategies to help improve my nutrition. You can learn more about it at drinkag1.com/Jason. One scoop gives me 75 vitamins and minerals and whole food sourced ingredients, including a green superfood blend, probiotics, prebiotics, adaptogens, and more. AG1 helps me fill in any nutrition gaps in my diet because I know I don't eat perfectly. And it gives me a nice boost of energy and focus throughout the day. And now that we're nearing the tail end of winter, I'm glad that I have been supporting my immune system. I've got three kids in school. I've only gotten sick once this season, so I'm very grateful for AG1. But what I really love about it is that it changes. Over the last decade, they've made over 50 different improvements to the formula based on the latest research to help make all those nutrients more absorbable and the product more rigorous with the third-party testing that they do. Yes, AG1 is certified safe for sport. Go to drinkag1.com/Jason to see the great offer they've put together for our podcast listeners. You're going to get a year's worth of free vitamin D and 5 free travel packs of AG1 with your first purchase. You can sign up for a single shipment, or you can go for a monthly drop if you want to make AG1 a part of your regular healthy lifestyle. Go to drinkag1.com/Jason to sign up today. All right, that's our show this week, my friends. I so appreciate you being here, for being part of the Strength Running community, and all of your support. If you haven't yet, look at your podcast app and make sure you click the follow button so that you see every episode as it's published. We'll talk soon.